You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kind of Funny's Game of Thrones, the final season in review. That's right. We are reviewing every single episode in the final season of Game of Thrones, all six of them. This is the penultimate episode of the entire series, which is pretty crazy.
Usually the craziest episode of every season.
They gave up on that a while ago, I feel like.
No, the second to the last episode usually has, I would feel, a little bit more impact than the actual final episode.
I feel like they gave up on that after like season five, though.
Season six is second to the last episode when Cersei blows all of King's Landing.
Wasn't that
well,
the
not
last?
All of it. She blows the Red Key or the Baelor's Sept.
I thought that was the.
I think that was the last one.
Yeah.
Season seven?
No. Season six. I think it was the last episode of season six. What I'm saying. I don't think it was penultimate.
Oh, I thought it was the second to the last.
I don't know. It doesn't.
Either
matter.
Way, these guys like really have really like fire. They got a lot of fire.
Big fans
in this
of fire.
Episode.
Firefest, baby.
Season six. Episode, let me see, nine was Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah, pretty good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really cool.
It was a good battle,
but then that was a different time.
Let me see
that
season seven.
Time.
Wasn't it, though? Oh, wow.
Season seven was Beyond the Wall, the one where they go out there and have to fight all the
hard home.
Yeah.
Thing? No, where Daenerys Gendry comes and rescues miles. Them with the dragon and then she loses Viserion.
So I think, I feel like they've kept that going.
My point is that I feel like the season finales got better. After those seasons, those mattered more. Whereas back in the day, they didn't.
Man,
it was they were
set up.
Yeah.
But do we even care about the series finale?
I'm Tim Geddes. This is Andy Cortez. That's Kevin. That's Andrew Renee. And that's Nick Scarpino.
Hey, everyone.
We are going to get into this. It's going to be a long, hard fought battle. We'll see how it all ends. You can get the show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames on Mondays for one more week. Then you can also get it whenever you want to watch it on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com or on podcast services around the globe. Just search for Kind of Funny Reviews. That also includes our in-review series of movies that we do every week. And that's a lot of fun. Let's just start off with our thoughts. Andy?
I overall enjoyed it. I think that they're, like many of you all here in this room, disagree with some of the decisions with character development and stuff like that. But I still was on the edge of my seat during a lot of the very intense action scenes where you care about people, even though some decisions prior to that, you're like, what the fuck are they doing? But then they come back to a character, you're like, oh man, here we go. Like, I still felt all that. So I think this might be one of my favorite episodes this season.
Kevin?
It was a really cool battle episode season where, like, undoubtedly this is one of the coolest battles that we've seen.
Dragons, you can see it all?
Yeah, you can see it all. Dragons utilized in the absolute most awesome way. Am I happy with the decisions that they came to and, like, the moves that are happening? No, I'm not. And it's, man, it really hurts to see so much character development just kind of be, you know, just erased. Like, yeah, it doesn't matter. So, yeah, I'm not happy with this series so far.
Andrew?
There was a lot to unpack in this episode, for sure. And I think that there was a lot of expectations from fans across the world going into this, knowing that we've only got two episodes left before the series is over. And once again, I think that we're seeing the kind of breakneck speed at which we're getting the plot development happening, and I think that there's a lot of casualties and collateral damage for how fast we're moving through some major story beats. That said, visually stunning as an episode, really fantastic directing work. I think, again, the showrunners have made some missteps with some of the narrative decisions that they've decided to commit to. And that's kind of a bummer. However, I think that, you know, we saw some really interesting moments and some cool moments, and which we're obviously going to get into in just a minute.
Nick?
I really like this episode. I was very, very entertained. I think this is every bit the episode that the Battle for Winterfell should have been. I thought it was beautifully done, and they put a lot of budget toward it, and it had an epic sense of scale that I don't think in a lot of the other battles, or at least the battles this season, haven't had so far. That was our biggest critique of when the Night King came to Winterfell, was that you didn't really understand what the hell was going on. And I think this totally turned around for me, because you got that sense of how big King's Landing is. And when they pull back to those wide shots and you just see the dragon just painting a line of fire out throughout the entire city, you really feel that. And then you feel it back on the streets when like Jon's stuck there or Arya's stuck there. Like everyone else says, I mean, it's no surprise. Like, I don't love all the decisions we've got that the showrunners and the writers have made up until this point. But putting all that aside, starting this episode where we were, I think this is the best possible way they could have done this episode. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm not hating a lot of the outcomes, actually. I find myself going, like, I think that's some of the stuff was really, really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a cool episode. I definitely think that, with the exception of episode 2, this is my favorite episode this season. 2 had such great character dynamics. This was a great fight episode. I would say one of the better war battle episodes we've seen. I forgot to do this earlier, but it's episode 5. The name is The Bells. Barrett's saying it might be called The Last War. At the time of recording this, because we're doing it right after the episode, it's not official yet what the name is. So it's either The Bells or The Last War. I hope it's The Bells, because that's a dope name.
Cool. I'll keep looking it up while you guys, and I'll give an update.
It was directed by Michael Sapochnik, who also did the all the fight episodes that we know. All the good including, fight episodes. Including the...
Isn't it Miguel? Oh, really?
It is Miguel. Yeah. It is Miguel. Yeah. Can't read. And yeah, runtime of 1 hour and 20 minutes. That honestly, I felt in this.
I didn't feel like, I thought it was.
I felt long.
This felt like 2 hours.
I felt like there was so many scenes of them from people's point of view in the streets, and of just fire coming out and burning. Yeah. It's like at some point we get it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really cool. This is a great episode of TV. It's not a great episode of Game of Thrones, and that really upsets me, because I feel like so many characters, like where they ended up, like Cersei, for example. Like Cersei and Jaime to me is like,
very sad. It's so funny because that didn't, I mean, like, yes, I don't love that Jaime decided to leave, but I kind of get it. And I understand, like, them dying together, I thought that was poetic justice. I thought that was sweet. And like, that's what it needed to be.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Uh-huh. That's like at the very end of the episode. Beginning. I have like 24 scenes of shit we got
to
go through.
We don't need to go like. Totally seen by saying like that. If you don't want to, we can just kind of.
We've done it for every episode but you're the boss. No, you tell me what you want.
Just like discussion wise, at least for now, like start top level, and then we can.
Well, there was two conclusions, two relationships that I liked. And then we can go to plot. One, the Cersei and Jaime, Euron, menage a trois. God bless him. I thought their ending was fitting, and I really thought the Arya Hound relationship that I think that came full circle. I thought that was awesome.
Probably the most powerful scene
when he pulled her aside
and
was like, "You got if you keep going that way, you're gonna die. You're gonna be me. You're gonna die. I'm going to die. You don't need like don't do that. Don't be me. Go the other way. Go do something else." And she finally realizes that this track that she's been on since seeing her dad die, she doesn't need to be on that anymore. Yeah. And I thought that was such a fucking awesome moment.
I get that. And you're right.
I love their... But that's the one relationship they haven't fucked up.
But I mean, in my opinion, I feel like they kind of already had this moment. And so for them to have it again...
But I think her resolve was strengthened after the Night King. And I think she was still on that path. Like when they joined each other on the road leaving Winterfell, she was still in that mindset. And I think he's in the mindset of like, I'm going to change her mind on this. And I think leading her into that and then having that moment where it's like, are you really going to do this?
I don't know why that... I mean, that didn't show... Because it seemed like it wasn't until the moment that, like, literally things are falling around them that he was like, you should get out of here. And it's like that felt weird and selfish.
But I also felt like maybe she wasn't going to stop until she really realized that. I mean, I'm explaining a lot away in my own brain right now. But that moment for me was we're at the point of no return finally. We're literally like, I could have told you every single thing up until this point, but the fucking sky is literally falling down around us. And if you take one more step that way, we're all dead. So make the choice. And she finally realized, oh my God, this guy's right. Also, he's been looking out for me like as a father figure. I thought that was a very touching moment.
Yeah, no, it was definitely. And then her
going out and trying to
save
more people was cool.
And then the Cersei Jaime thing to me, it's just like, I get it. And it is poetic justice, I guess, for them being like, oh, they started here. Now they're ending here. I get all that stuff. But like, that's not the story that they built with Jaime forever. And I mean, even Cersei, I'll give Cersei the hand wave because it's like, she's crazy as hell.
Right.
But Jaime, 2 episodes ago, knighted Brienne.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, but you also have to remember, like, yes, and that was a great moment. And again, if it were me, I would have been like, I would have loved for him to have been able to stay there. But you have to remember also, like, she's pregnant with this kid. Like, that's, his baby.
And he's never cared about that before.
The problem with that is...
That's not true.
Yeah, that's not true. But the problem with that is that he knighted her. They fought and won.
Yeah.
Then the next episode, he fucks her. The next episode, it's not just fucks her. He, like, essentially says, I love you.
Yeah.
But and I then think, leaves.
Yeah.
But I mean, they could have not done that. But she knighted, that, he knighted her. Like, that could have been the end of his thing.
We didn't need to break her heart.
Yeah. Like, it's, that's so.
We didn't need to turn Brienne into a literal weeping mess over a, like, fuckwad of a character.
And now he just goes and dies with Cersei. And it's like, I don't know.
And it's, like, in the, like, I feel like one of the least interesting ways, they're just in the like, dungeons and everything collapses around them. It's just like, wow. All right, cool.
Especially because, like, when they were on the map, it's like, that would have
been cool. Yeah, that would have been cool.
And whatever. A lot of weird, like, symbolism in this. And, like, the horse at the end and stuff. I don't know.
I don't know. I like him. Just I like him in the crypt at the end. Like, no way out. Sorry. I thought it was good.
So the episode begins with Varys. So we know from episode 4 that Tyrion and Varys had several conversations back and forth of Varys expressing his concern over Daenerys and her laying waste to King's Landing and saying, you know, we should stop her. She's not fit to rule. And Tyrion saying, I'm loyal. And then this is where, you know, Varys's end really begins. We see him riding a raven about Jon Snow's true lineage, who he actually is as a Targaryen. We see one of Varys's little birds come into his little room there, and she's talking about how Daenerys isn't eating, and he's having the little bird check up on her, and the bird saying, they're watching me. And he gives this line of, you know, the greatest risk comes with the greatest reward. Like, that ever pans out to mean anything?
No.
It kind of is pointless.
Did you guys get the sense, though, that he wasn't just writing one? He was like Xeroxing
things,
sending them everywhere. I think he realized what was going to go down.
It was like old school chainmail.
Yeah.
Do you think he sent them out?
I think he did.
Because he sent at least one,
and he was like finishing a different one. He's like, oh,
that was totally the RT if you think Daenerys is crazy type thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then he burned that one. It's like, all right.
Well, yeah, he didn't want to get caught, which is the irony that, like, he knew he was going to his death anyway.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, why did what's-his-face tell her? Tyrion?
Tyrion.
Why did he tell her? Him. Like, great, like, you killed your best friend.
And why did she kill him after?
Because I think that there is something in all these characters that they realize that maybe Jon is the one that should be ruling, and that Daenerys is starting to come unhinged. And I think he told them that for the same reason Jon told Sansa that, which is like, I don't know how this is going to go down, but it ain't going down the way we thought it was going to go down.
I think the same reason he told him, I think he told Varys because he didn't have it in him to tell everybody else.
Right, but he knew Varys would
do the job.
And Varys did, in fact, go to Kinko's.
It's kind of like taking the onus off of him.
Putting up pamphlets everywhere.
But why did he tell Daenerys then?
Because she already knew.
Well,
when he walked in, she was like, she said, John, is it John?
But he walked in to tell her, though, right?
She says, like, someone betrayed me, and she doesn't insinuate
who
it is.
But regardless, he was going in to tell her that Varys betrayed him.
Well, no, Tyrion was. So the next scene that we get to is Jon arriving at Dragonstone, which I thought was weird because he was supposed to be leading the infantry and the army of the Northmen. And so I don't know why he's suddenly diverted and he's like, that's a plot hole that we don't need to get into. Like, but he gets there with Varys, and Varys tries one more time to talk reason into somebody. Says to Jon, we both know what she's about to do. Varys says, men decide where power resides, which was, I thought, a really interesting line. Jon, you know, I don't want it. She is my queen. Again, you know, making sure that Varys is crystal clear about where his allegiances lie. And then we get to the scene with Tyrion and Dany, where Tyrion walks in. Dany is a visual wreck, right? She's like clearly
cool.
Somebody who's been in mourning,
really
who's
good
upset.
Job,
she's been weeping because her best friend was just killed in front of her. And then she says, someone's betrayed me. And then there's like this kind of pregnant pause with Tyrion. And Tyrion's like, yeah, no. And she thinks it's Jon. And he says, no, it was Varys, actually. And then Dany comes after him about him divulging or getting information from Sansa. She says, well, why did you tell Varys? And then he says it was a mistake.
Another mistake.
And then Dany says she trusted you to spill the secret that could destroy your own queen.
And he did. Like, he played perfectly into that. And also, like, John did betray her.
Yeah, I mean, she brings that roundabout. Secret. She even says that, right? She goes, it was John.
But I feel like in that episode, when they left that scene between the two of them in front of the fireplace, that he pretty much says to her, I'm not keeping this secret.
So that's the thing. Is like, the word betray gets weird there. But yeah, he straight up told her. But like, that's he's still betraying the queen.
But he's betraying the queen because she made it very explicitly clear. Like, if you do this, this will become a big, it'll become a thing that will be our undoing. So just know that the second you tell one person, that's it. We're going to have to come to terms with each other. We're going to have to come, you know, to a head with each other. And he knew that. He fucking knew it. John knew it. John knew going out there and telling everyone that it was going to be, it's going to spiral out of control. And now it has.
I feel like the next scene is the next scene where John goes to her and like they like talk, or is
no,
it later?
No, so the next scene is when Varys is writing more letters, right? His Kinko's expedition. And then we hear this like kind of like this like thud, thud, thud approaching. And this is when Varys recognizes that someone's approaching and it doesn't sound like friendly footsteps. Mm-hmm. So he quickly burns the final letter he's writing. He takes off his rings, which I thought was supposed to be symbolic of something, but I don't know what.
I feel like it is because like I remember he had the rings back in like season two, it must have been, when he was talking about the dude that cut off his dick and all that stuff.
Was like, he maybe in the box the dude had those rings
there
on?
Was definitely something with the rings. I don't remember what it was.
I just thought it was like Donnie Brasco. When Donnie knew that the mob was coming to kill him, he just put his wallet and all of his keys and his watch and the thing. It was like, I'm going out for a coffee to his wife, because he knew he wasn't coming back. I just assumed it was like, these are like heirlooms. Like
he probably liked them enough where he was just like, someone should have them.
Yeah, for sure. We have seen them before.
I do have confirmation. A bunch of other websites are also like Variety and stuff are calling it the Bells. So cool. I feel like
the Bells.
I'm going to call it Hell's Bells.
Okay.
Grey Worm comes in, opens the door. This is when Varys knows that they've come for him. They bring him down to the beach where presumably the same spot where Melisandre had burned some people alive when
interesting.
That I missed those days.
But that was on the actual beach. This looked like it was more on rocks.
It's possible, yeah. I didn't look at the exact surroundings, but it seemed in similar locations.
What I found interesting is like what was Varys' long term plan? He didn't think he was gonna get caught sending these letters and was trying to set something up after, because you can't imagine that he was going to have enough time to stop this.
But he also did have his like speech, I think it was last episode, where he's like, I'm like, my loyalty is to the people. So I feel like even though he knew he was probably going to get caught, he was still trying to do everything in his power to make sure the person who would protect the people is known to be the true heir to the throne.
I buy it.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think also, he's looking at the situation going, how do I get out of this in time? Like, how am I going to escape the Dragonstone Keep?
I don't think there was any of that. I think that he was like,
I'm dying.
Yeah, I'm dying.
And so let me get the word out to as many people as possible before they kill me. You know. Right. So he dies, right? So the Dracarys in this scene was so understated. Like, I thought Jon was going to behead him.
It looked like that. Yeah, I thought that was going to be like a test.
And
of
then
his
we mostly see Drogon loyalty. Kind of like creep out of the darkness. And I'm like,
I think this was the first shot we saw in this episode that started a chain of a lot of amazing shots. You're like, this is where the budget went. Like,
I was like, when are they going to kill this guy? And the camera was fans, I was like, oh, that's terrifying.
Really fucking cool. I loved how they did it. Seeing Varys, seeing the like kind of like the look in his eyes change as the dragon was there. I was like, this is really rad.
Yeah, great performance from that actor.
Did you guys talk about the line he says? I was texting my wife. Where he was like, I hope this is like my sacrifice was unnecessary. That was really sad.
I hope I'm wrong.
So Tyrion and him have like a quiet, quick moment where Tyrion says it was me, you know, like that I'm the one who gave you up to the queen.
It's me, bitch. That was also another, I think, really powerful, really cool moment of like, I'm sticking with like the people I believe in.
Right.
Like, I think that this is still going to pan out in a good way.
But I also feel like there was a little bit of like, I get it. Like, someone has to stay like close to her and help like at least talk some sense into what's coming. You know, because he kind of had that look like, this is our job. This is what we do. Like, you know, this has come to a shitty end for me, but somebody has to be a voice of reason. And like, I'm glad it's you, even though you had to sell me out to do it, to stay close to her, you know?
Something I don't understand.
Those are two great actors just having that one great moment.
Something I don't understand that probably has a really easy answer, but like, why didn't she also kill Tyrion? Because I feel like both of them were equally guilty at that point.
I think she didn't kill Tyrion because Tyrion didn't like he was passed the information from Sansa, so he doesn't really have guilt in that, right? That Sansa told him. His guilt lied in the fact that he didn't immediately go to Daenerys and say, Sansa told me this thing, but as your hand, I should have known this. You should have told me. I shouldn't have had to find out from Sansa. I'm really with you, Tim, that it's confusing. Right, because
so it's like he got spared because he's the one that came and told Danny.
Like, no, you're right. Like it doesn't make sense. Daenerys shouldn't have spared him for several of his fuck ups. We talked about this a couple episodes ago.
He explained that to her when he's telling her, and he said some bullshit excuse, but it was along the lines of like, "Look, this is what we got to do. We got to talk. We got to communicate." Like,
yeah,
I need to know.
You watched Love and Sex.
You're right. Yeah, he did say like. Somebody should have told me, and then somebody should have told him because he's the dude who whispers. Like, he should know these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. So, after this scene, we have a moment with Grey Worm and Daenerys in her room where they're holding Missandei's collar, the collar that she was wearing when Daenerys first met her back when she was buying the Unsullied army. And she said this is the only possession that she brought with her, was the only thing she owned. And she hands it to Grey Worm in case he wants to keep it as a token. And Grey Worm then just throws it into the fire.
Dope.
Yeah. Grey Worm leaves. In comes Jon Snow. They have this moment where Dany is clearly desperately trying to reconnect with him.
She needs
to say,
support.
Like, I'm lost. I'm sad. I'm depressed. I feel like I'm alone and no one cares about me.
Am I only your queen or am I your lover as well? Yeah. Kind of doing that.
Right. Right.
Am I your aunt lover?
Kind of like officer. I think like that whole part of it is not even like where her head's at.
Yeah.
She's just like, I need somebody to give me some affection because I feel so isolated. Yeah. And so
because
she kind
of
offers.
Advisors are gone.
And she says, everybody hates me here.
Right. Essentially.
Because you're a fucking idiot though. It's like that. I'm so upset with Daenerys just as a whole because she's made so many bad decisions time and time and time and time again. Even recently, when it comes to treating the people of the North, and now it's like the limited people she has left. Like this scene, we've been talking about their chemistry for seasons now, and it doesn't feel like it's been seasons. It feels like it's been a couple episodes, you know, because it's just not there. And them together having this conversation, I'm like, what are we getting out of this? And then it's like, oh, just Jon getting manipulated again, like a fucking idiot.
I felt like this scene was really powerful and really like I think this is the saddest scene in the whole episode where it is Daenerys like on the last bit that she has left trying to reach out to someone for support and he like an idiot just is like.
Yeah, God forbid you just lie a little bit to save millions of people's lives.
So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, this is where she says, am I only your queen? And he pulls away from her because he's got some bullshit sense of honor or whatever the fuck his reason is.
Well, his honor just killed all these people.
Like, he can't give her a fucking hug and a kiss? Like, that's so hard. You're supposed to be in love with her.
That hug would have saved millions of people in the city.
And he says to her, you'll always be my queen, and then but rejects her. Right in the moment, and then she says, "Let it be fear." Then
God, it's just like that moment where they bring the fucking white to prove to Cersei that the White Walkers exist, and Jon fucks up again, and Tyrion is like, "Can you just lie once to fucking help
us
out?" Like,
yeah, shut your mouth.
But it's just
it.
Like he definitely told Daenerys about Varys, right? When Varys came out, like came to greet him as he was getting there, and was like, "Hey, man, you should be king." He definitely went and snitched, and that's why. Daenerys was like talking to Tyrion.
Not that we're aware of, but we have to imagine like, that conversation happened because otherwise, like, he would be like, "Why are you killing Varys?" Right? Because he knows why.
No, but like her when Daenerys has a conversation with Tyrion and is like, "Who betrayed? Like, I was betrayed." I think that stems from Jon having a conversation with her about it.
It must
like,
have.
Yeah,
how
right?
would she know?
Yeah,
how
I
would
think she know? I think that's a fair assumption for sure.
And it just... So I think that he would totally understand why Varys got barbecued. And then why is he being so cold to her? Like, what is it... I'm
he just
missing...
still feels awkward about a bunch of shit, about her being the aunt and all that shit.
Yeah, because Westerosi people, right, have a very different sense of relationships than traditional Targaryens do, right? And so coming from the land of the Starks, where Jon grew up and was raised, he has this very, like, distinct moral compass, which is different than what Daenerys knows,
but
right?
If this is him being uncomfortable, that it's his aunt, like...
Why can't he just say that?
But no, I don't understand how, like, it seemed like when Cersei... No, not Cersei.
Annie.
No, the redheaded sister...
Sansa.
So when Sansa was like, when they were talking to the Vale people, and they were like, "You'll marry Aaron," she wasn't like, "Oh, ew, cousins. No, that's weird." Mm-mm. You know, she was just like, "That sounds like a good move." You know, and it's just like, I don't buy this thing that like he's like, "Oh, we're aunt and uncle."
I think it's deeper than that, though. I think it's really he is conflicted about everything. I think he's conflicted about the fact that he knows deep down
that he's Aegon Targaryen, supposed to be. Right?
Like, he should lead. And I think he's kind of looking at her going like, she doesn't have the support of everyone. People don't like her. People like me. I've got troops behind me. Like, I think it's just a complex situation. And I think that, like showing her emotion and sleeping with her and getting that intimate in his brain, like, complicates everything. So I felt like when he pulled back, he was like, we're going to war tomorrow. Like, let's...
Yeah, but I just, like...
But he's just not political. He's not the guy that wants to play the game, and that's, like...
It's not even about politics. Like, he cared about her in the last episode, right? And in this episode, she is in a terrible place. She hasn't eaten. She looks physically distraught.
Right.
Like, she's clearly broken. And instead, as she's reaching out, I just don't buy that he would be like...
I'm with you. I think the whole thing just feels off, right? Yeah. It's kind of got like a stink around it that we can't quite put our finger on. The next scene that we get to is in the throne room at Dragonstone. And this is where one last time Tyrion is pleading with her, please don't kill and burn all of these innocent people. These are the people that you came here to save. And this is also him trying to... tell her, like, you know, don't become this mad queen that everyone's saying that you're setting yourself up for. So they come to this arrangement where Tyrion says, if you hear them ring the bells and raise the gate, that is the universal sign of a surrender from the city. So please, can you at least agree, if you're going to be insistent on attacking King's Landing and the Red Keep, that if they ring the bells, that you will... stop the attack.
Mercy. Yeah.
And save the people who don't want to fight for Cersei. And then she kind of gives this nod and looks at Grey Worm. Grey Worm accepts that she has commanded this, and then he leaves to go lead the charge on King's Landing. And then we get the scene with Davos. So we kind of fast travel to King's Landing, where we're outside of the city gates, and then the army is there. And Tyrion is there and says, I need to ask you a favor about, you know, Davos being the smuggler that he is, saying, hey, if you, could you get to this point by the Red Keep? Essentially asking him to shepherd Jaime and Cersei off to Pentos so that they can, like, live out the rest of their days. And this scene, I was just like... But why the fuck do you care about what happens to them?
Not only that, but why would anyone in the right fucking mind who has seen this woman burn people alive with a dragon, why would you agree to that? If she found out that you did that, you'd be like, you're dead as fucking Dorne.
But like, the idea was this all happens before any of the battle starts and they give up and everyone just walks in and it's like, okay, there's no need for a battle because Cersei's gone. They have given up and like, we're all good. Everything's fine.
I wouldn't take that. I'd be like, no, she's gonna find out it was me, and then I hear Dracarys as I'm walking down the street, and just.
I don't know if it was mentioned, though. But also in that conversation with Tyrion and why am
Davos?
Daenerys. Daenerys, that Jaime has been captured.
Yeah, they talk about Jaime being captured.
Oh yes, which I had your brother was stopped. I have that in quotes here. Sorry, I didn't read that. So she mentions that your brother was found trying to cross our lines. So her guards have presumably captured him. Before we get to that
That was such a weird moment too, because it was like, well, why wouldn't he be able to come join the battle if he wanted
100%.
To? Like, I don't understand why I would just be like, I just helped you guys win that thing. I'm coming here to fight.
Yep.
Like,
it doesn't make any sense.
I think that
I get
Daenerys rightly so distrusts.
I mean, that's
Jaime Lannister, right? Like, she has no reason to trust him.
I mean, the fact that he just fought for them.
Right.
That's a good enough reason. That's the best reason.
No, I agree. But, like, did anybody explain that to her again? Maybe somebody should have sent a raven as to why he left Winterfell in the first place and, like, what his motivations were.
But I don't think that her guards would be standing ready to capture him if they saw him, and all he would have to say is, hey, you remember at the last fight when I was there? Like I've come to help here. Instead, for whatever reason, when he gets captured, he tells them the truth.
Yeah.
And I get that, like, that we
maybe
have
maybe we didn't, I mean, maybe Brienne told Tyrion or something about the info, like,
sure. But again, whenever there's so many, like, holes to be left out, it just shows a weak story.
This
is
a plot hole for sure, because, like, in a perfect world, he leaves Winterfell, he crosses the guard lines of Daenerys' army, they maybe don't know who he is, then they bring him as a prisoner to her, or at least to one of her advisors, whether it be Grey Worm or Tyrion or someone else, and then they're like, oh, we know you, and then there's an exchange between Jaime and Dany about, like, why did you leave Winterfell? What are you doing here?
Well, they said they knew that immediately because his hand.
Yeah.
Right. I'm trying to go down a hypothetical, like, what if the writing of this episode Andrew had fucking like, been better?
If we had 10 more episodes, we would have seen an episode like where he got caught. Like, and that would have been really good.
The whole thing stinks of, like, they rushed it through and it's becoming garbage town, right? I'm mad about it.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. You're mad. Your anger is totally justifiable and not, like, and many people feel it out there. Like, when we do these episodes, afterwards, I'm like, oof, we're going to get a lot of shit. And it's like, no, like, the whole, like, everything I'm seeing, all the people that, like, love Game of Thrones are responding the same way of, like, this season is a disappointment.
It's just really, really frustrating. Mm-hmm. So the next scene is a really short scene between Arya and the Hound, where they have approached King's Landing.
I like this
They're one. About to walk in. This guard is trying to stop them. It's like, who are you? What are you doing here? And she's like, I'm Arya Stark. I'm going to kill Queen Cersei. and kind of the Hound just kind of looks at the guard like, what are you going to do? You're going to try to stop us? And then we cut away to Tyrion visiting Jaime. So Tyrion shows up to where they're holding Jaime prisoner. He says to the Unsullied guarding, I'm the Queen's hand. Like, you can't stop me. I have the highest authority unless you got your orders directly from the Queen, which clearly they did not. So they walk away, leaving Tyrion with Jaime. And then, of course, does him a favor, right? So this is what Jaime did for Tyrion back in King's Landing, where he freed him before Tywin was able to kill him after he lost his battle where the Mountain killed
the Viper.
Prince Oberon, right? Correct.
All right.
And so now this is where
sexy.
Right. So this is where he gives the whole shtick about sail away with her to Pentos. I've got a dinghy waiting for you. This is the scene that he'd done with Davos. So he frees Jaime and he's like, there are tens of thousands of innocent lives at stake. If it weren't for you, I never would have survived my childhood. You're the only one who didn't treat me like I was a monster. So they have this like touching moment between brothers, which is great. And I think it's actually apt that Tyrion freed him because he definitely owes Jaime more than once for saving his life. But like at this point, I'm kind of like, what the fuck is Tyrion even doing anymore?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
but I mean,
where is his character arc?
But even has
where's
that,
his motivation?
He has that line though, where he's like, "We're at the end of this," and Jaime even says, "She's gonna kill you for this," and he goes, yeah, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not an innocent either. Like, I.
Well, he was like, if I can. And that was a great moment, too, where he was like, if I can prevent tens of thousands dying for one.
Not so innocent.
Yeah. And, like, that was a great moment.
Person,
but
like,
to me, I thought that was in the middle of the night and Jaime would have enough time to go and they would have a moment.
It took Jaime 13 hours to get 20
feet. How did it take him that long?
Well, I think they had to wait until. Actually, I have no fucking idea.
No, and then also,
I have no idea.
It seems
because
like,
everyone else was already trapped in the not the inner
right, but
Red
the,
Keep,
outside
but
the
like
walls
the outside. So how did he even get in? Like, you think he would just have snuck in during that in the same spot?
It seemed like he could have gone just to begin, like to the around the back, like he did later
maybe
on.
Start there.
But also, there was just no issue of the former
guards.
Like he's just gone and nobody really cared or
and
nobody
at no point walk out in the say, episode hey. Does anybody say what happened to the Kingslayer?
Yeah, no consequences.
Like, the plot holes are so deep in
and
this
especially
episode,
because
it's disgusting.
That but that was also such a big point of like conflict there where it was going to be like if she fucks up or if you fuck up, we're killing Jaime. And that was like kind of really stressed when Daenerys is talking to Tyrion. Mm. And then it was just kind of forgotten about that he was let free, which is pretty disappointing story-wise.
Yeah. Daybreak happened.
Yeah.
Or as Nick likes to call it, brunch time.
The brunching hour. Yeah, so they keep talking about it. So John lands, and that's seen a couple of scenes back when he lands outside of King's Landing, and he's like, Daenerys wants to attack now. And then the armies are all like, no, oh no, it wasn't John. It was Tyrion who's like, Daenerys wants to attack now. And John says, daybreak at the earliest.
Which I love, because I know this is not how movies or TV work at all, but this totally feels like a, hey, we heard you, it was too dark. We agree. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to wait until the perfect hour.
Sky's just sun right above ahead. You know what I mean?
Sorry. We're about to talk about this, but like, it also would have made a lot more sense for her to come with their dragons and attack at night when they can't see her.
Yeah.
But whatever, it doesn't matter. The dragon is very OP this episode.
Terrifying to see fire at night. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Agreed. But, So we get to the morning of the battle, which we all agreed was like brunching hour, because it was felt like 10 or 11 o'clock. Not fucking daybreak,
no,
to be
not
certain.
At all, yeah.
And then we see all of the Lannister bannermen loading these giant scorpions
all
along
the wall.
And
they take their sweet-ass time now.
Of course. I mean, they look like they are properly slow to load, unlike the episode where Rhaegal died, where those things were rapid-firing. That was just last episode, wasn't it? So we see Arya back with the Hound inside King's Landing. They're making their way through the crowds towards the Red Keep. A lot of the civilian population is still pouring into the center of the city and fearing the battle is about to begin.
And this is another moment for me where it all started being like, this is a fucking special, cool episode where it reminded me a lot of Titanic. Like, there was a fear starting to break in before the battle even started. Like, it wasn't even, like, shit wasn't even, the ship hasn't broken in half yet.
Right.
It was already just like, we're all fucked, everyone's running, like, people are just gonna get trampled and die.
Yeah.
And like, there was a cool level of fear of just the, like, humanity of it all, not even the, like, warriors.
These moments were very tense. And like, good on them for being able to make us feel this tension that was so real and awesome, and like, this is what I imagine a
war
battle
is like.
So we also see Jaime walking into King's Landing as well, trying to make his way towards the Red Keep, presumably to get to Cersei, in addition to Arya and the Hound. And then we see the army of the Lannisters inside the city. And then I have in my notes, plot hole. Why did no one notice Jaime leave? And then Arya and the Hound make their way through the gate. So this is where we see the Lannister army close the inner door to the Red Keep, because previously Cersei had commanded, leave it open, she'll be less likely to attack if there's all these civilians here. And then Cersei's like, fuck it, close the doors, there's too many people here. So Arya and the Hound sneak their way in. Jaime does not. And so he goes off to find some side route. And then we'll get to that in a second.
Very long side route.
Very long side route.
His travels in this episode were so bizarre, of like him going in an alley and then where he shows up later, you're like,
how did he get there?
What the fuck?
Isn't there a giant wall around all of King Landing? Was there like some...
opens a door and it's like Winterfell. Like, what are you doing? Sansa's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, him showing up. We'll get there.
I want to say this. We're jumping way ahead, but I think I'm going to forget to say it later. I loved certain shots at the end when Arya was there and everything was fucked, but Ash was falling, and it felt like this is Winterfell. And they played the Stark theme, and like, this is really cool, like symbolically of just how it looks. And like, we've seen shots of Jon Snow in Winterfell looking exactly like Arya does after a battle in King's Landing.
Right. So the battle now has begun. We see Daenerys fly in on Drogon. So in last week's, like next week on, we see this one shot of Euron looking to the sky, like the kind of scream of the dragon.
And so they
made good on that. And so in this episode, he's looking up into the sun and breaks through the clouds. Here comes Daenerys down.
And he's on his boat.
And he's on the boat out on the ocean. And then she makes a strike out on all of his ships. And the whole time that she's attacking the ships with Drogon, I was just screaming, why didn't you do this the first time?
She could have saved Missandei.
Everyone knows it takes at least two dragons to practice on before you get it right a third time.
Oh my god, it was so infuriating.
War is hard, man. I was so glad that
she finally destroyed the Iron Fleet, but why the fuck didn't you fire on them with Drogon when you had the chance?
Tim had a great joke. I was like, well, you don't know how much time passed between the second dragon dying and today. Could have been months. She could have had time to train. And Tim said, what did you say? You said she watched...
She watched all three movies.
All three movies.
I was trained to drag.
That's yeah, very funny.
But it's dynamite.
Yeah, no, this scene looked cool. I'll give it that. Like, yep. the fire
everything
on
with the dragon looks great in this.
Until Euron jumped away, which was like...
Mm-hmm. Of course, he just magically jumped off the ship as it was exploding.
Which was dumb. He should have died on the ship.
He should have died on that ship.
Because the fact that he, of all fucking places... like, and this is my only real grievance with this episode, is that how the fuck would he just... It just happened to wind up at that one spot where Jaime just happened to wind up at. That's just poor. That's shit.
And we see a wide shot later on of just how far off of the beach the ships are. And he was in full leather jacket.
It's like 6 miles.
He was like,
as hot topic as possible, dude.
I'm talking 2006 hot topic. Mile or two even from more the, from than the shore.
Yeah.
It's all a bunch of hot fucking garbage.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel like in this moment, this is the first time we see a dragon actually be as badass as everyone has been telling us they are. Because it's like, in the last episodes, I was like, oh, the dragons are fucked. These scorpions take them out so easy. And then in this one, it was like, nope, doesn't matter how many fucking scorpions you have.
That
is
a cool thing that this episode did. I feel like it delivered on every cool dragon moment we've ever seen and upped the ante and gave us all of them. It was the moment that the first Dracarys, back in season 4 in Marine or whatever, it also gave us the boat fight, which I forgot what season that was, 6 probably. But then the season 7 thing when they were trying to get...
attacking at Highgarden.
Highgarden, yeah. Mm-hmm. And like on land came and the dragon just burned hella troops. Mm-hmm. We got that times 1,000 in this episode. Yeah. All three of those things.
It wasn't
really
Highgarden,
though, cool.
Right? It was the other one.
No, it was Highgarden.
It was on their way back from Highgarden. They had dropped off the money.
It was at Highgarden. Yeah,
they poisoned Olenna and then were leaving.
Yeah, and they had dropped off the money and then they made that clear.
It was a different caravan that took the money. But the mass of the army was still walking back.
Yeah. Like, he was like, we had that moment where he had the caravan made it with the money. So we're able to pay off the
Iron Fleet.
Iron Bank from
Braavos.
What bothers me about this scene, while it was really cool, I just feel like a world has to have rules that it follows. And in the last episode, it set up that like these scorpions were a real threat, and they just threw that away. And it's just like, man,
what was the point?
Yeah, what was the point? Like, this is a weak story when you use...
Because if you have two dragons, it's too OP.
Yeah, what's very disappointing.
They got lucky with 3 shots in a row, man. It's like a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Seriously, isn't that just the fucking shit? Like, they killed, like, Rhaegal with these crazy shots, and then, like, all of those ships magically flinched, made it out unscathed.
I was really hoping they would be able to...
It's infuriating. So,
I was hoping they'd be able to pull something, some twist or something out of their pocket to be able to neutralize the scorpions, but... they just didn't do that. Like, the only thing I really, really liked about the Battle for Winterfell was when Arya killed, like, that comes out of fucking nowhere, and you're like, oh, that was pretty cool. Like, I wasn't expecting that. Like, I thought they were dead, and there you go. So I was thinking at some point here we were going to get something, someone thinking ahead and being like, hey, we figured out a way to get
coming out of nowhere with an anti-scorpion scorpion?
We just figured out how to fly our fucking dragon that we've been flying around for 7 seasons.
Yeah, I was hoping that there was going to be a nice moment with Yara, like, coming in to challenge Euron.
She's done.
But, so, like, many characters
there was,
are
there was
done.
Nothing there.
We'll see her one more time in a final episode, like... montage of everyone standing there like smiling.
20 years later,
we'll
they're
see.
Force ghosts.
So
I hope we get it 20 years later.
I want to be clear, despite the fact that I narratively am very upset with how the episode played out, I thought the scenes were really cool, especially this next one. So
great moments.
Before we get to that, yes, Andrea, let me tell you that this episode is brought to you by Liquid IV. Liquid IV is the fastest, most efficient way to stay hydrated. Trying to drink more water? I know I am. Liquid IV hydrates you 2 to 3 times faster and more efficiently than water alone, with an added bonus of vitamin C, B3, B5, B6, and Nick, I know you were asking for this one.
B12.
Whoa.
I mean, what do you mean?
Baby.
I know, dude.
Liquid IV helps people jet lag, helps prevent jet lag when traveling. We'd all use this to our advantage there, right? TSA friendly and is perfect for on-the-go travelers. It helps to keep your skin hydrated while flying and can be used before, during, and after flights. Staying properly hydrated is one of the most important factors during music festivals. It's a perfect way to fight those nasty hangover symptoms. Barrett?
I get hungover a lot.
You do. You might need to use this Liquid IV. Non-GMO, vegan, and free of gluten, dairy, and soy. Clean ingredients. It's what everyone's looking for. It can provide the same hydration as drinking 2 to 3 bottles of water. Wow. It's a healthy alternative to traditional sugary sports drinks No artificial flavors or preservatives. It contains 5 essential vitamins, including more vitamin C than an orange and as much potassium as a banana. And if anybody saw the movie Honey, I Shrunk the Adults, the third movie in the Honey, I Shrunk the franchise, you would know how important potassium is.
It is.
Liquid IV, I tried it. It was very hydrating. Let me tell you that.
Yeah,
it felt good. Sure, I got some on my desk.
I was going to say, do you have some?
It's like a powder, right?
Yeah. Put in the water. You're all good
sugary
to go.
Sugary drinks just give me kidney stones.
You have to explain to me the Honey I Shrunk the Kid reference.
You've not seen the third one. It's great.
We don't have to get into it.
One of the kids needed potassium because he has a potassium deficiency. Oh, okay. And he was going into a spasm, and the little mini adults had to go get the banana.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was a whole thing.
They drag over
the kids remember to get the
right
banana.
Right now, my listeners get 25% off at liquidiv.com when you use the code KFMS at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order on Liquid IV's website. Go to liquidiv.com and enter code KFMS to get your savings and start getting better hydration. That's liquidiv.com, promo code KFMS, LIQUIDIV.com, KFMS. Don't wait. Start properly hydrating.
Now.
Today.
Today.
So let's get wet.
And next up.
Oh, God.
Let's go.
Is that not
shout out to Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your FICO score.
FICO, you got it. That's it.
FICO score isn't, because ECO the game. You know what I mean?
Tomatoes, that's probably what.
FICO score isn't great. Sky high interest rates can make it incredibly hard for you to break out of the revolving debt cycle. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. A couple of my friends have went through these issues in the past, and this definitely could have helped them out. Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes that you're more than just your credit score. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes without affecting your credit score. That's super important. The best part, once the loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. That's no time at all. 24 hours, baby. Free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/morning to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/morning. Did you guys see what happened?
Yeah,
well, I don't know.
Big old spit thing.
No, it was like one of those dry boogers that have just been in there. Ew. And it just fell.
That's right. Disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah,
I thought it was a spittle.
Just not told us, and no one would have had to look at it.
That's not the kind of man he is. Yeah. Thank you for your honesty.
You're welcome. It's a little TMI with TIM. You know,
I'm gonna go pee,
and then I'm gonna get it.
All right. Well, while you do that, I'm gonna continue on with the battle scene that we are in.
Let's do it.
So this is actually one of the cooler parts of the battle sequences. So we've cut away now from Danny destroying all of Euron ships and Euron miraculously surviving and swimming a mile and a half to the fucking beach in his full-length leather trench coat.
Lungs of steel.
And we get to the front of King's Landing, where the rest of the Dothraki are charging the gates. The Unsullied are there. Oh, thank you. And also, how did so many Dothraki survive?
Apparently, only 10 of them died.
I know that they set up that like 50% of the Dothraki lived, or whatever bullshit number they just threw out there because they wanted to have some Dothraki in the final scene. But we saw all their lights wink out.
Yep.
They were supposed to be dead. This is bullshit. I want some stakes in this game.
Maybe they just all were like, hey, if shit goes down, just throw your torch down.
So, yeah, so we see the Golden Company.
They can't see us. It wasn't their torch. It was their knife.
They're not going to know.
Their swords.
We see the leader of the Golden Company who's feeling all, like, swagadocious, like, out there being like, ha, ha, ha.
This somehow looks exactly like Lawrence from Funhouse.
Yeah.
He does kind of a little bit. And then we hear this really loud, like, kind of banging, and, like, both of the armies are kind of looking at each other, like, what's that noise? And then, of course, this gigantic fireball bursts through the gates, knocks down the wall, and in flies Drogon with Daenerys, just burning, like, a charred path through King's Landing, which, why the fuck didn't you do that sooner?
No. Was it burning through King's Landing? Because I thought it was that he had only done a fireball to blow that door up.
Well, right, so she came from the other side. She came from the ocean side, right? And then burned
in the door,
the front of the, well, she had to
from the inside,
right? But she didn't like precision fire, but like
other shit burned.
That, you guys, yeah, that moment, like, was so cool.
Let's not argue over semantics over like how much of King's Landing burned here, because I think
that at this point, because we do get the shot a little bit later where she's standing over and it looks like King's Landing. Perfectly
she's
fine.
Being very conservative here.
King's Landing is also very, very large, right?
I think. Yeah, but they walk through that entrance. Whatever.
It's semantics. So we see Drogon burning the scorpions along the front gate
just
wall.
Just taking them all out.
Scorpion guys are like this. What happened? We had this. You know what I mean?
The scorpion guys are like, they said she was going to come that way. We're not prepared from that way, Andy, or
like,
that way.
It's like when your Spurs defense just completely falls apart. You know?
Why are you...
Let's not talk about it. They got knocked down last round.
It's been weeks.
So this is when Qyburn is now approaching Cersei inside the Red Keep and saying, yo, bitch, it's done for us.
The defenses are gone.
All of our scorpions are gone.
But we have the ships. Ships are gone.
Yeah, right now they're thinking...
TFO.
Like, dog, all we needed was three scorpions to take out one. We have like fucking 40 of these things now.
She's like, we just need one lucky shot. We just need these fucking elephants.
You know?
Like, I didn't love this.
She never got her elephants.
I know. That was a problem.
Oh my God.
Although I don't think they would have been much good against this dragon.
We never know. She wasn't going to get some scorpions.
Her getting
an elephant would have been a better arc than what they did to Jamie.
But I just love this scene because it's totally that moment where she's like, what about the scorpions? And he looks over, the scorpions are all burning. He's like, I don't have any scorpions. Yeah. Like, what about the ships? Looks over again, ships are all burning.
What about the golden company?
I have a bow and arrow, your grace.
It's simultaneously like a really cool, destructive moment of seeing Daenerys fully embrace like the power of Drogon, but also feels a little hollow after everything that's happened this season and how not useless the dragons have been, but how vulnerable the dragons have been. But suddenly now,
yeah, they're so indestructible.
He's like OP, and it's just like they should have been. They were OP the whole time. It's super frustrating. So we cut away again to Davos, Grey Worm, and Jon charging on the ground inside King's Landing. They get to this face-off where they've approached the inner wall of the Red Keep, and then we see the Lannister army kind of stopped. And then there's like this gap in the road, and then I thought that there was going to be some dialogue there, but instead it's all unspoken. Like the kind of leader of that battalion throws his sword on the ground, signaling we're surrendering.
Such a strong scene.
And I said, oh, bitch, cool. You thought.
Yeah.
You fucking thought.
So they lay down their swords, and that's a signal like, hey, you've won. Like and this is when Daenerys lands on like one of the parapets, and like, and she's really close, and Drogon does this big scream, and then they do this cutaway to the bell tower, and then there's like a beat, and then the bells start to ring, which is really this amazing moment of like, okay,
Tyrion's like, oh, thank God,
can stop.
I saved everyone.
And then Daenerys takes off of the wall and flies towards the Red Keep. And in my mind, I'm like, yes, just go straight to
the Red Keep.
Get Cersei, but instead she starts to attack the city.
Because that would make sense, even for someone angry.
Yep.
She did...
makes no sense.
No sense.
Why?
No sense at all.
Why did she burn
her plan? She's the Mad Queen, man.
But also, that's not an answer. That's just like,
yeah.
What?
This moment really just felt very cheap.
And was it cool? It was awesome. It was real cool.
Was it cool? Like, I thought it was one of those moments where
seeing King's Landing burn is a cool idea. It's a cool image, and they showed it. It was cool.
It's a cool image that literally thousands of people were being burned alive.
Yeah, in this world, I agree with Tim. I mean, it's terrifying.
I didn't think it was cool.
It really disgusted me.
And that's my problem, though, is that we're now watching a TV show. It's like before it meant something more to me. Like now it's just like, oh, this is just, they're doing the things that are cool.
For sure.
The bad guy does the bad thing.
That's the thing. Like, but prior, in prior seasons of Game of Thrones, the bad guy doing the bad thing wasn't necessarily the bad guy. It wasn't as cut and dry in that, right? Mm-hmm. It was always like, there was always some level of like, you understood why the bad guy was doing what they needed to do. Even with Tywin Lannister, the head of the household, he was the biggest dick on the planet and just totally fucked people over. But you still, at its core, realized he was doing it all to protect his family.
His family.
Right? He had motivations.
He had good motivations that maybe they weren't things we would do, but you understood put in that spot, that might be a reason to do this. And here you're just like, why? Because her friend died?
Daenerys, when you look at Daenerys over the entire series, it is essentially
so out of character.
She gets fucked in the beginning, really bad, where it's like she was taken from from nothing really.
Traded
it. And it's turned into like, oh shit, you have a bad life. Like,
quite literally.
And then pretty immediately is like, given this, and then given that, and then given... It's like she's Samus in Metroid by the end of the game where it's like you have every fucking power possible. These bad guys stand no chance. And then it's like she starts losing these little by little, and now she's just throwing a tantrum. And it's insane. It makes no sense.
It's very out of character for her.
It's almost personally. Like they're equating her in some sense, and not apples to apples here, but with Ramsay, in that she's just gone.
I thought
full.
You were about to drop Donald Trump there.
No.
I mean, how many
Trump
in? But how many times? How many times have we been warned about this? Like how many? Like
how many?
They've been warning us about like
since season
but
one.
But like the idea that they haven't given a single hint about her becoming. Like, you know, the Mad King.
We're
in like
that.
The second to the, No.
We've gotten so many.
No, we haven't.
We've gotten so many moments where they're telling us.
Not from her actions, right?
Yeah, exactly.
She hasn't actually done these things.
What have we got? We've gotten her... We've she gotten moments where people were like, Tyrion's like, hey, here's a moment where you could show mercy. And she goes, no, I have to, as a queen, I have to make the choice of, but that's not madness. That's her saying, I need to show strength,
right.
not mercy.
I feel like so much She's of it never has done just it. Been, I have everything, I'm just going to burn. I'm always going to burn.
I feel like there was that one moment, I think it was two seasons ago, where they had the same conversation where Tyrion was like, you can't just go in there and burn everyone because these are the people you have to rule. And you can't, you don't become the thing that you're trying to dethrone right now. And they had those great moments. And up until... Really, this season, I feel like that hasn't necessarily even been a conflict for her. It's a matter of, hey, I'm a ruler. Do I rule with strength or do I rule with mercy? I have all these tools and sometimes I'm going to get it wrong, but for the most part, I've gotten it right. Here, she literally turned around like a Batman character, was like, my eyes are dark and I'm Two-Faced and now also, I'm going to burn everything. You're like, where the fuck did this come from?
That's also like the last time we ever see her in the episode. Like...
We
only see the destruction from the ground, which is I thought was really interesting.
Well, we do get one more scene
she's the
with
bad
her
guy now.
on the dragon where she is specifically
going towards
taking
Cersei.
The Red Keep down.
Right.
Right. So like there's that cutaway between Cersei looking at Drogon rapidly approaching the keep, and then he kind of does a circle and then like one of the towers from the keep falls. So after this moment, we get to a cutaway with Jon where he comes across one of his own soldiers attacking a female civilian, and he is like tries to push him off of her, like, stop, don't hurt her. And then there's this pause when then his soldier lunges at him to attack him, and then he kills his own soldier. It's really an indication that it's all out madness and every man for himself at this point, that destruction has really turned everything about everyone's alliances upside down. This is where we cut to outside the city, where Euron miraculously appears as Jaime is like walking along some weird path on the very edge of the King's Landing or the Red Keep next to the water. And then they have some jabs back and forth about him being the Kingslayer.
Dude,
and,
here's
oh,
my
you
want
to kill another king?
Watching this, like, it hit me in my gut where I was just like, oh my God, Euron is going to take down Jaime?
Yeah.
Like, do they have the balls to do that
Hell
to us
yeah.
right now? And then they did the thing that they did. They had this fight, and it ends with Euron saying, like, I killed Jaime Lannister.
I got you. I'm the man who killed
and
Jaime
it's like,
Lannister.
It's like, wow, dude, we're ending this show with Euron being the guy. Like, that's the bad guy that we have. This is how they die and with that fight, which admittedly was tense. But it's like,
but also,
why did Jaime get stabbed so much? He might as well have not gotten stabbed.
Right?
Yeah, for as long as he survived afterwards.
Well, it was so stupid. Like, the way where he stabbed him in the abdomen, there's no way he would have been able to physically walk all
that
the way
far.
Into the Red
no
Keep.
No way.
Yeah.
We know how big that mountain is. I know it's like, oh, it's movies, it's TV. That should not be the answer to this, man.
Yeah. And it just, like, you're totally right. Why did he even stab him so many times? If...
Why
he doesn't.
He
doesn't kill.
This didn't have to happen at all. Euron should have died on the fucking boat.
100%.
Euron has been a waste of space character
the entire series.
Oh, I have my money. I never told you guys this.
You did
from season
multiple
one
times
on
season
Euron.
Season
right,
one.
Season
Euron
one. Dude, we're gonna get a
full
season.
Right?
I know.
And
I
you
love
know
his character just because he's just madness. And I even like that he. I mean, at least he's the one character that was true to himself the entire time. Whereas he's dying, he's laughing and then just dies.
Except he
was
true to himself the entire time because the season he was introduced, he acted totally different than the season after.
He was smart. He overthrew his guy. It's not. It was silliness. It was silliness.
Him, like...
I didn't like this scene.
It's so stupid that he does... Daenerys kills Jaime,
right? She mm-hmm. collapses the throne.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's just like, what? Then this scene really. It was just to be like, yeah.
It was TV.
It was just to be like, let's make sure you know that character's dead, and let's have one more climactic moment where everyone's going to be tense. And it's like, yeah, it was tense, but like, tension for tension's sake is such a bad, upsetting thing for this show. This show is so good. Like, if he had won, if at the end of like the next episode, Euron and Cersei were sitting on the throne and everyone was defeated, that'd be fucking cool. Because
it would at least have been interesting. It would at least have been unpredictable. And yeah, if he killed Jaime, that would have been like a holy fuck.
I didn't see that coming. Super disappointing, but at the same time, it would have been like, fuck, man, I can't believe Jaime ended there. Like, who knows if he was going to go save Cersei or kill her?
That would have been so great.
So in the middle of that scene, we get one cutaway where Qyburn is finally like, we have to go, Your Majesty. Yo, like, we got to get the fuck out of here. And then they do a cutaway where we see wildfire exploding
which was so around cool. the city. Like, such a fucking cool shot where this is one of those moments in this episode where I'm like, all right, at least they do care somewhat.
Yeah, they had to give us that.
Because everyone was like, story.
But that's what all of us thought, like, she's calm the entire time. Why is she calm? What is happening?
Is she
going to blow up the whole city and blow all of... Because that's what I thought Cersei was going to do. Mm-hmm. I thought she was going to hit a button and the whole city was just going to explode with the dragon
in it.
So
many people thought that.
And then she would have been like, oh, we blame it on Daenerys. She's the one that has the fire fucking machine that's flying around.
And also maybe kill a dragon.
Yeah, and maybe kill the dragon. I thought that would have been awesome. But nobody was smart at all in this episode. Everyone was just totally dumb.
Cersei was just confident in what she had, which is so not Cersei. Like, that's... That's not her character.
It just it's like sad. Just to jump forward quickly, like and like, man, what a strong character for so long to suddenly be at the very end groveling in fear of death, and it's mm-hmm. just like, whoa, way to take Fuck that you, all Cersei. Back. It just, man, throwing away all these things that they built for so long.
Would have been awesome if at the very very end when she's like, Jamie's like, just look at me. She was like. Hey, I'm not actually pregnant. Sorry.
Ooh,
did I tell you I was pregnant? Nah, it's just the two of us, dog.
It would have been at least an interesting twist. So we get probably what I would think is my personal most emotional and meaningful moment of the episode between Arya and the Hound.
Love it.
So they're inside the Red Keep. They're in the map room, the room where Jaime stormed away from Cersei at the end of last season. And Arya is still determined to go and kill Cersei. The Hound saying, no, like, stop. This is where vengeance leads you. Do you want to be like me? You can come with me, but you'll die here. And, like, they have this brief pause, and then she looks at him and is like, you know, says, like, calls him by his name, Sandal, and is like, thank you.
It's like Sandor. The first time she's ever...
Sandor.
This Sandor, scene, while it was nice, it didn't make sense. I don't feel like... Like, I feel like she made a decision to become, a killing machine of vengeance so long ago that this is who she is. Absolutely. Like, what is she leaving to go do? Is she going to go now meet up Gendry and be hey, let's do this. I've changed my mind. I want to have a family.
Maybe.
No,
I don't know.
She's a warrior. Like, her purpose is death and destruction. Yeah, I think they've set that up, too.
It's pretty clear that she's like, oh, I got to kill one more person.
But, I don't understand what she was planning to do when she left the keep.
I think that... Maybe all of the destruction that was around her and that she saw as she made her way in and the humanity, the crush of humanity of these people just trying to survive as she was making her way into the keep had a really big impact on her. Because the last time she was in that spot in King's Landing is when she saw her father beheaded, right? And so I'm guessing that she's got all these emotions going through, and even though she's got this vengeance, she has to have that question in that moment with herself, do I want to die? Is my vengeance against Cersei so strong that I'm willing to die for it? And that's essentially what Clegane is trying to tell her, right? That's what the Hound's trying to be like, yo, like, it ends for you here if you have to kill her. And so she's like, actually, no, maybe I have other things that I want to do with my life.
Yeah. She was the last on the list, though.
Like, yeah, the list has been her life. It's been the only thing to keep her sane for what?
But I think the other...
5 seasons?
I think the other important tool was he was like, look what's happening. Everyone's dead. She's dead. Like, you don't have to go in there to make sure she's dead. The fucking roof is caving in on everyone.
I don't think he was saying that, though. And that's the problem. You're right. But that's not the message. The message was, it's not worth it. You need to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not that, oh... she's going to die. Don't worry about it. If it was, I feel like that would have
been
better.
Well, I think like thematically, it's like, I mean, obviously, if you're trying to go out for revenge, like you're probably going to, it's probably going to kill
one,
you, right?
You have one real, like, job left.
So yeah. So, I mean, I feel like, I just like this moment because I feel like he's always been the sort of like a surrogate father to her. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. he finally had that realization that it's great for his character too, because he finally had the,
finally, we've had it before.
But he had the realization to him that he actually stopped her and said straight up, like, you can't do this.
Well,
every other time has been beating around the bush of like, oh, you're tough, girl, whatever. But finally, he just was like, we got to call a fucking, like, stop with the bullshit. Get the fuck out of here. Like you're going to die and I care bullshit. About you.
That's who she was.
But it's like, not, it's, her, it, it is who she was.
Because the situation of where they are, if he had had that conversation with her in their scene prior where they're just on horseback riding towards King's Landing, it wouldn't have been as impactful because it wouldn't have been in the wake of all of the destruction that Arya saw from Daenerys on Drogon burning the city, from all of the soldiers, from all the civilians dying. Like, it wouldn't have been the weight of it on her, and now she's like, oh, I love shit. This scene.
But then
like,
maybe
he's right.
He doesn't leave with her?
I really feel like...
But no, he says, it's time for me to go. Like, I have to finish this and see it through to the end.
The whole... Like,
so is she.
The whole Not series... Right.
She's like fucking 18, and he's like 45.
And also, the whole castle's burning.
And she's also been warning Jon a lot about Daenerys, and I think she's seeing all this destruction being caused by the person that she was warning her brother about.
And there's definitely more other things for her to do.
I just think that, like, she's never been afraid of death before. She's never had the fear of death leading her decisions. Yeah. And, like, that's what this became.
She turned into a little
It's about her being afraid of death. We know that Arya is not afraid of death. I think it's
she
more
She stopped
of,
being a warrior at
I think
this
it's
episode.
More of, like, what can I live for?
Yeah, it's less about dying and more about dying with no cause or no point.
Yeah, what's the point?
Yeah.
But like, I don't understand. The point was to... But like the point was for her to beat
not
Cersei.
Not like this.
Yeah.
No, I think the what they're trying to say with this moment is
not like this.
I just think that this moment so doesn't much. Make any sense for the character they built.
I disagree, but that's okay. We could argue about it forever. Yeah, sure, we still got a little bit more to go. So this is where we finally, fucking finally get Clegane Bowl, the thing that they've been, you know, leading up to, they've been hinting at. We see Cersei trying to escape with the mountain, with Qyburn and a whole, like, battalion or whatever of gold cloak soldiers, the Queen's Guard. The ceiling is falling. And we know that the Hound is approaching. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, but there's so many soldiers. Wow. And then magically, the ceiling caves in and kills all of the random extra dude soldiers.
He kills like
except
three of them,
for
though.
Two or three, right?
Yeah, they left a couple alive for him to kill. Just to remind you, he's still a badass.
Yeah, he makes short order out of them.
It was great. Yeah.
So this is a fantastic fight scene. Where Qyburn, who has been by Cersei's side for so long, helping her pull the strings to become the evil monster that she is today, where he tries to stop because Cersei says, stay by my side. I want your protection. Don't go fight the Hound. And then he looks at her and is like, bitch, you don't own me.
Yeah.
And then he goes to walk. And then Qyburn is like, you know, you heard your queen. You have an order.
Just throws him by the face.
It
was awesome. Yeah. Holy shit. Dead. That was so visceral.
Yeah. Went out like a ragdoll.
Yeah. The back of his skull just explodes.
And then Cersei goes like this.
And Cersei's like, I'm just going to like sneak on out here. You guys work out your beef.
I thought it was just like a kind
that was
of
kind
of
weird.
Kind of weird for it to be a little comedic moment of like, excuse me, I'm just going to.
But we also got like this, the moment personified like in front of our eyes of the Hound saying, fuck the queen.
Mm.
That one, like this is that right there. He's like, fuck, I don't care about her. I care about this guy right here, you know?
Right. Well, obviously we find that this is like the one and only motivation for the Mountain, right? So we cut away from Clegane Bowl, and this is where Jaime runs into Cersei. And they have a very brief reunion where he hugs her and is like, oh my gosh. And she's like, you're wounded. He's like, yeah, I know.
Doesn't matter.
I'm superhuman. I can get stabbed in my guts and still live. And then we cut back to Clegane Bowl.
You learned it from Arya.
Wait,
it's okay.
This was the most, this little meeting was the most disappointing scene, I think, in the whole episode for me. Because it was like, okay, here we're going to really see what Jaime's been up to. And it's like, oh, yep.
Oh, yeah, no.
This arc.
He's given up on everything.
Beautiful, beautiful arc that they've built from this, you know, knight in shining armor that is a piece of shit. That is a piece of shit. making all the bad decisions, like not giving a fuck about honor or any of that, building him to a character who loses his arm, loses his like his identity, and rebuilds and just throws it all away to go back to his sister. And at this moment, when we saw it, I was like, oh shit, this is where he like broke up with
a sister that he turned his back on.
Yep. In the room that he turned his back at.
Tried to kill him. 5 episodes ago.
Tried to kill him.
Literally 5 episodes ago, he left her.
Mm-hmm.
Because he realized she was wrong.
In the last episode, she sent an assassin.
I felt bad for Bronn, honestly.
Why?
Is he going to get his thing?
Probably.
Who's going to give it to him?
Tyrion's still alive.
Oh, he's dead as doornails after this.
Why would he be dead? No one caught. No, I don't think anyone knows that the Kingslayer went out.
Where'd that Kingslayer go?
Oh, burned.
Yeah. The little guy. Let him out. Dracarys.
Yes, it is. I don't know. This whole ending with Jaime and stuff, I hate that we were made to feel sympathetic for Cersei at the end. We were supposed to be happy that she died.
Yeah.
We've been waiting to be happy for her death this whole
Let's talk about series, that in a minute.
And
we
now
get to
we're
it,
yeah. kind of meant to feel bad, yeah. you know.
What about the prophecy?
Yeah, so we have...
Well, he led her down there, so there you go.
Not that
prophecies matter. Prophecies don't matter.
You're right, but like this one
should have... Nothing fucking matters
but
in this episode.
This prophecy,
this
though, has been built up.
Season.
This show has delivered on it more than even the books has.
He led her to a dead end.
No, that's bullshit.
He led her to a dead end that was collapsing.
You know that's not even what they were trying to imply there.
You're grasping at straws here. So
that's all this episode is.
So we cut back to Clegane Bowl. The fight continues. He puts a sword in him, and then he pulls the sword out.
Doesn't work.
And then we cut to Arya, who is now in the wreckage of the city after having left the Red Keep, trying to rediscover, like, you know, why she's there, what she's doing. And now she's just in, like, fight or flight survival mode, trying to get out of the city as Drogon continues to burn his way across King's Landing.
And cinematically... I thought a lot of this was very interesting.
Absolutely.
I loved the Hound Mountain fight. It looked great. Mm-hmm. Everything they were doing was great. I loved the Arya. It was very reminiscent, especially given her outfit and look.
She looked like Jon Snow.
The Battle of the Bastards episode. Yeah. Like, ash everywhere. Her just being, like, super Saving Private Ryan. Like, that stuff was cool. The fact that they intercut those two, I was like, what are you trying to tell
us
right now?
What does this mean?
Now?
Yeah.
Like, this is dumb. And, like, I want to see one of these things through. Like, the way that they edited I thought was, like, very...
I liked it.
But why?
Because that showed kind of like the duality of where she could have been. Like, had she stayed, she would have been died, and instead she got to get away.
Disagree.
I totally disagree. I think if she had stayed, she could have helped and killed the mountain, and then they could have left. And here's what I would have loved to see: everything's collapsing, and the Hound saves her the same way the mountain saved Cersei earlier by covering her. Do you remember that moment where stuff starts falling? And like that's how he dies. Like
sacrificing
himself for someone he loves.
The last time that we saw these sort of weird, like this sort of cut, it just reminded me of when they show the baby and they cut to Jon Snow to let you know, hey, Jon Snow was that baby. Mm. That's like the sort of same vibe I got. It was like, is Arya the Hound? Like,
I know it's not. That's a good vibe.
It was weird.
It's some interesting directing choices, to be sure. So then we cut back to Clegane Bowl, and now it's coming to, you know, a finale where the mountain sticks his fingers in
the Oberon thing.
The Hound's eyes, like he killed Oberon, and like that moment was so tense. And the whole time,
when the Hound was stabbing him in the story. Neck. Mm-hmm. Out of all the characters, I feel like the Hound actually had an arc that they committed to throughout the entire series. Yeah. And here we are seeing all of this, and him dying in the fire and all that. It's like, good for you.
But also, but not dying, realizing he can't kill it. And he has to say, he has to just take it into the fire.
Yeah, because like, he stabs him in the eye.
Stabs him in the fucking face.
He thinks that it's going to kill him. It clearly
I'm
does
happy
not.
It didn't.
Because, no. I mean, at least like in the books, they don't really say it as much in the series that what Qyburn has done to the mountain has really turned him into almost like an undead, zombified
100%,
version
yeah.
of himself. And like, there's a lot more magic around
he
it.
He also doesn't have a
in
head
the book
in,
than
in
it does.
In the books.
No, he does, but he's more of like a monster in the books than he is. Like, he feels pretty human, even though he looks very Darth Vader without the helmet, right?
With like him having agency at the end, It kind of like, I feel like that undid a lot of the, like, because they've made him look like a robot. The for like we've gotten what,
four seasons now.
Four seasons.
He looked like a mindless.
I'm gonna go here. I'm gonna crush this weapon. Dude. And now he was just like, hey, fuck, I have a goal. It's like, well, why didn't you do this when they had the meeting in earlier? If like your goal was to kill this guy,
and that is the thing. It's like,
why do we need a game bowl there?
And whatever, people made this shit. I didn't make the shit. So what do I have to fucking say? But like, if I had to do it, it would have been Hound fighting him, and Hound would have had to cross through fire to kill this zombified thing that isn't really his brother anymore, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Right.
Instead, we got this. Yeah. Cool.
They
fine.
Threw themselves over the edge of the...
Into the fire.
Yeah.
Into the burning city below. There's to be no question, like, they were fell from such a height that neither of them were to survive, right?
So. Yeah, the mountain not being a zombie, though, it's like...
No, I get that, but I mean, just, like, him going toward the thing that, like, ruined his life.
That's what I'm saying. Hound's shit, they did great.
I thought it was great.
Mountain,
not so great.
I still
think that, like, there was a very obvious thing that could have happened, which is, the youngest daughter.
Arya.
Arya.
But I mean, if Arya went into that fight, she would have died.
If Arya went up there, helped somehow, they both pushed him out.
The mountain's tougher than the Night King.
Now Arya goes into this thing where he was like, you can't go this way because of vengeance. She goes instead to save him. I just think that like not letting him die because of vengeance would have been strong for both of their characters.
I agree, but I think that what they were trying to set up was that this had to be the Hound's fight alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure even if Arya had insisted on going with him, he would have been like, yo, this is my fight. Yeah. Get the fuck off. Like, this is between me and my brother. Like, don't interfere. And I think she would have respected that and not interfered. I think it makes sense that Arya was not part of that fight.
They did bring up that Arya leaving Hound to die. He's like, if I was dying, would you leave me again? She's like, yes. If she didn't, that would have shown a lot of growth.
Right.
That would have been great.
Yes. So after we cut away from this scene, we're getting towards the end of the episode. We find
we have like 20 minutes of her walking around.
Right. We have John literally and 20 minutes.
And it's just like, man, I'm glad she was there. Otherwise, it wouldn't have mattered as much. Right, directors? Yeah.
Well, we get first a scene between Jon and Davos, who are on the ground trying to pull their forces back because they see it's clear that Daenerys cannot be stopped and that their own soldiers are going to die at her hand because she doesn't realize the destruction that she's causing on the ground. And so they try to retreat and call for a fallback with all of the remaining forces that are loyal to Queen Daenerys. And this is when we cut to Arya, who's got this crazy makeup with like this blood just streaming down her face.
Stunning.
Like, ash all over her body. She's clearly just like trying to survive. She's by this giant tower that's now cracking and is about to fall. She manages to escape
Wasn't
into a secret
the
room.
Bell tower?
It was one of the
bell
towers.
I think it was
towers.
One of the bell towers.
Yeah. It might have been the bell tower.
Because I liked that.
The bell was on the ground.
This is the problem with me only watching the episode once. Because we're recording this literally immediately
the file. Let's watch it one more time.
But she finds her way into this little alcove where there are some King's Landing's like civilians hiding there, and she sees the mother that saved her from being trampled with her daughter, and is like, you guys can't stay here, it's not safe, you have to keep moving, we have to get out of the city. And they're like, we can't go out there, there's just death waiting for us out there. And she's like, no, we have to keep moving. And she convinces them to leave, and then as soon as they get out of cover, along comes Drogon. First the Dothraki make a pass through and cut up a bunch of people,
including the mom. Like, well, they like,
yeah,
it seems like
slicer in the
something's
back.
Something's happened to her because she can't walk.
Somehow, yeah.
And then
and she's like, take my daughter.
And Arya manages to get out of the way, but then like the mother and the daughter die in each other's arms, burned to a crisp, and it's horrifying.
And this little horse we've seen the entire time, this little girl playing with this little toy horse, is in the little girl's hands, and it's like, oh yeah, that character that they've been building to like be like, hey, this is the common folk, is dead. And it's like, man.
Just like Shireen with hers.
Oh yeah, horse it
was.
Too, yeah.
It was really almost physically like upsetting how they just killed so many innocent people in this part of the episode.
It was necessary, though.
Like, it wasn't necessary.
It was necessary to create the villain now that is Daenerys.
Yeah, but right. I mean, and you mentioned also like it's crazy that Arya was there, but we had to see it through her eyes. We had to see it firsthand. Like
he was being sarcastic.
What's that?
He was being sarcastic. I was talking shit about the directors in the post-credit thing. Were like, you know, it really, it only matters when you see a situation through a character we care about's
eyes.
Yeah, no fucking shit.
No, but I mean, that is true. And honestly, that impacted it a lot more. Like, we saw it through John, but then, but well, they're setting up that Arya is going to be like, we got to kill her.
Yeah.
We have to, we had to see all that stuff. I liked all that stuff. I liked that. I mean, she was dead wrong about people leaving that fucking building. Yeah,
why'd they do that? Why'd they have that scene of Arya going
I think she
there?
Was supposed to, she was trying to be heroic, and it just didn't work out well for
I'll
her.
I'll lead all of you, but I'm just dragging these two out with me. Yeah. Oh, immediately dead.
I'd have been like this.
It's just exhausting. Shut the door.
It's exhausting. That's a good word.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so frustrating one scene after another. So then now we cut to the basement of the Red Keep, the dungeons where Tyrion has told Jaime, just keep going as low as you can. If you go out, there's a secret passage. There'll be a boat waiting for you.
Fuck, we're not so here.
That's the boat we saw. That's the boat we saw earlier.
Well,
because he used the secret passage to get in.
Right. So I don't know for sure. But Jaime and Cersei go down there. Clearly, it's been collapsed because of all the destruction that's happened to the keep because Daenerys has been attacking everything. And so they get down there and it's clear to them that, like, there's no getting out of this room. So Cersei breaks down, starts crying. I want our baby to live. Please don't let me die. He goes to her to comfort her, holds her, and is like, nothing else matters, only us. We're the only things that matter. And then in this moment, they, like, embrace. They're crying together, and then the roof collapses on top of them. And I'm just like, are you fucking kidding
but
me?
But they said that before to each other, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's been mirrored before.
I don't care if they said it before. It's bullshit.
I do crazy things for love, pushing him out the window. It's like, yeah,
No, there was a moment where, I can't remember what season it was.
Were the that matter? Yeah, no, yeah, that's come up many times. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Mad about this.
It's horrible.
See, I'm conflicted on it. I like his character arc. I do believe that he should have stayed there. But, like, I think this is a fitting end for both of them because I think they deserve
for
each
Jaime?
Other.
You yeah. think it's Let a fitting end?
That was Jaime season one
because I feel like
end.
Jaime just can't get away from it. Like,
give me,
this is
give
his
me a
destiny.
Second. So my problem with this, and I want to see, like, if you don't agree, but, like, for seasons and seasons, not seasons, the whole series, they built up, there's a prophecy of Cersei. We saw the flashback, one of the only flashbacks we've seen in this entire show of little Cersei going to the witch and the witch telling her what's going to happen about her killing the queens and whatever and the kids, all of her kids dying and that one of her brothers are going to kill her. That didn't happen.
Well, technically it did.
But no.
Yeah, that's he led her to a dead end.
Tyrion
dude.
Was like, go down there. He went down there.
It is such bullshit. And I just don't understand why they wouldn't have made...
And that's
to
one
have
side.
Jaime go
and
back.
That's in addition to Jaime and Brienne. That's in addition to all of this other shit we had. It's like, this was such a bizarre choice that I am really flabbergasted they made because I've had a lot of issues with the season.
It's a big twist.
It's going to sound crazy. What I thought was going to happen was I thought Tyrion was going to have them, like, go out and then, like, Grey Worm or someone was going to be waiting for him and kill them both or kill Cersei. Like, I thought Tyrion was going to actually, like, betray or use Jaime as a tool to, like, get her out into the open so they could kill her.
That would have been great.
Yeah. Let me read a little bit to clarify this prophecy. So over on fansided.com, they write, in the season 5 premiere, a flashback shows young Cersei having her fortune told. Maggie the Frog tells her, you will never wed the prince, you will wed the king. You'll be queen for a time. Then comes another, younger, more beautiful, to cast you down and take all you hold dear. The king will have 20 children and you will have 3. Gold will be their crowns, gold will be their shrouds. All that has come true thus far for Cersei, but there's more. Fans were quick to point out the final line of the prophecy included in George R. R. Martin's A Feast for Crows, and when your tears have drowned you, the Valonqar shall wrap his hands around your pale white throat and choke the life from you. Valonqar and High Valyrian for little brother. So cue the speculation about who the little brother or which little brother will be, because technically Jaime is a little brother too. And really, Valonqar gave fans a lot of room to play around.
But here's the thing. They didn't include that in the show for a reason.
Right.
So that's it.
You're right.
Yeah. Cool.
Great.
Cool.
Yeah. So all of it's kind of like another, like, oh, cool. Glad none of this meant nothing. So then we get to the final episode or the final scene of the episode. And this is with Arya looking at the ruins of the city after just seeing this mother and this daughter be burned alive, essentially. And then this random white horse appears. We assume it's like one of the Dothraki horses because it doesn't have a saddle on it, but it does have a bridle and a bit in it. And so she grabs the horse and gets on the horse and starts to ride out of King's Landing. And this is essentially like the end of the episode. And I'm like, What the hell, man?
It's supposed what to be hell? A so metaphor. The death count.
So here's the thing. White horses are like,
you Daenerys know,
the, horse. The red apples of this type of symbolism and fantasy and all this sure. shit. Death what was that supposed to mean?
Death on a pale horse, I think, like, is what they were trying to.
What are you
at.
Doing here? Like them, that was so on the nose and Barrett. So just like, yeah, we're ending this episode with this like drawn out hero. Moment of just here's things happen. Like here's the one character left that is the hero that we built up, and then a white horse, a literal white horse.
Hell yeah,
yeah.
No, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I mean, I like the imagery, but you're right. It's 100% on the nose.
Yeah,
and like. It's cool. Maybe it means something that we're all that's eluding us. But
I can't wait until these guys start writing Star Wars movies. You know.
No, here's wow, my thing, dude. Barrett. Real talk, wow. I'm okay with that because
you don't like Star Wars.
It's, no, because it's, no, this is gonna be the first time that since the prequels that we've seen a team from one episode to the third episode have a story and a vision that they're completing. And even for Game of Thrones, they didn't sign on to write books for George R. R. Martin.
Yes.
They signed on to adapt books to TV, and they did a kick-ass fucking job of it.
And he kept delaying stuff. For so many seasons.
The only,
so
the
I
only,
don't blame them.
The only thing that gives me pause for that is that the one season where there is no material for it, it's not good. Where they actually had to hire writers and come up with their own story like to finish
There's
this.
There's three seasons of that.
So it's not. Yeah. yeah.
Right? Or is it four?
I disagree. I think you're letting them completely off the hook in a really kind of flippant way. And I just 100% disagree.
What do you mean by that?
They wrote almost all of these episodes for this final season. That responsibility for narrative falls squarely on their shoulders.
But in the same way that like Barrett said this, and I totally agree, it's like, yo, episode three was the best Star Wars could do with what they had, with how bad they fucked up one and two. And guess what? Rise of the Skywalker is going to be better than what we've seen. Because they're like, hey, this is all that we're dealing with what we had to deal with. It's like, that doesn't mean shit, though.
Well, but the strength of these guys is adapting someone's really, really good work into TV. Like, that's unquestionable. Mm-hmm. Looking at the last couple seasons, mm-hmm. they're not as good writers as George R. R. Martin is. So, yeah. Like, the fact that they don't have him, like, as the stuff started running out, like, the fact that they've screwed this last season up so royally, given everything that was set up, is just, it gives me... A little bit of pause.
They write
to
dialogue
see what they
really
can do
well.
Well.
Yeah, I'll yes. say that. I had never thought about the way that you just brought it up, and that does make a lot of sense. I'm sure that when they signed up with season one, they did not sign up to write the ending of these stories. Yeah. And like, sure. It does suck that the books but have continuously been delayed. And it's just like, Tim, you're making a lot of sense. There is a little bit of like, I think leeway that I'm going to give them.
Yeah, but my point with Star Wars is there are no books. They're coming up with all this shit.
That's
all
Tim's
their own.
Point too.
Yeah, yeah, but well, that's not good.
I'm not trying
if
to
this
say,
is what they do when there's no source material no, to draw this, from.
But my, well, argument, but my argument is like what they're going to do for their trilogy is start from the beginning with a vision to the end.
It's not going
to
be a Kento.
What
bite.
I'm saying is there's no basis for that vision, and I don't believe these guys can pull this off. Now looking at they had some of the best books ever to draw from, and it was awesome until they had to start filling in the holes themselves, and now it's not so good.
But like, the fact
and to be clear, like I wanted to be like crystal here. I think that they did a fantastic job adapting from the material because taking material as dense as George R. R. Martin's work in Game of Thrones, the narrative literature series, is really tough to translate into TV without making it incredibly boring for many, many episodes. I think clearly what this season is suffering from is the breakneck speed at which it's happening because they haven't properly set up everything, which is leading to these gigantic plot holes everywhere and then making these rushed decisions that don't feel earned.
I disagree because I feel like that was last season's thing where it was like rushing a lot. This season doesn't feel rushed. This season feels like a reaction to what's happened before it. And I thought season 7 was good. It had fast travel issues. Besides that, I thought the story choices they made were sound. And season 6 I thought was amazing. Up there with my favorite seasons. And that was in them entirely. And then season 5, it was boring, but it led to good places. And we mm-hmm. wouldn't have had season 6 and 7 without it. Going back to 1 to 4, 1 to 4.5 was based on the books. 4.5 on was a little mixed. 4 was one of my favorite seasons, too. I think 4 and 6 are my favorite seasons.
So who put this above season 3?
I think the frustrating thing is that because it's on them, especially for this last season, there are so many threads that felt like they had obvious endpoints of like how we end these people's arcs, and they haven't really done that. Like you said earlier, the only person they've done that so far with this season is the Hound. And so I feel like the fact that they were given so, like they were – pretty much like set up to hit a home run, and they haven't, and that's why I think
they're definitely not finishing strong. That's for sure.
I think that the problem is that like too many of those are like easy answers, and they're trying to do something that's
maybe
crazy.
Subvert expectations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's like,
and that's a great way to end this episode, ladies and gentlemen. Subverting expectations, what everyone wants to hear in our favorite franchises.
Just watch Lord of the Rings, man.
Just watch Lord of the Rings.
The
Lord of the Rings is a far superior piece of cinematic filmmaking.
You know what you should do?
In every way.
You should go get that dead army that we haven't talked about for two books, but we'll just bring him into the third book for no fucking reason, and he'll save the day.
That's great, dude.
That's good storytelling.
You fucking nailed it, Nick.
Goddamn, Clarks is better.
You have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
Tim, do we have any reference to it in
the first book? Cut the show, Tim.
Fans submitted reviews or did any of that?
There isn't any.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're recording today.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're enjoying this.
Bye.